Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Friday finally got here, Jim. This week could not end soon enough between a lot of the Arizona.
Remember how great it looked on Monday?
Absolutely.
Worst week of Obama's presidency. Yeah. Yeah, it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah. Not exactly according to most of the conventional wisdom, which is often wrong. Unfortunately, in this case, the conventional wisdom suggested things would go our way, but it didn't. We're back to at least sampling martinis. We're not exclusively on the hard stuff today. Hopefully by Monday we'll be back to our usual demeanor. But we've got regular martinis in terms of topics today, good, bad, and crazy, all related still to Thursday's Supreme Court decision in one way or another. And the good martini here, Jim, is that Mitt Romney, very seemingly decisive and strong in his reaction to this decision, standing in front of the Capitol, saying that he plans to repeal Obamacare, that Obamacare has got to go, and the only way to do that is to replace Barack Obama. He made that crystal clear. Seems like a lot of people agree with him. Based on fundraising numbers, according to his own campaign, he raised over $4 million in the wake of the decision yesterday. Hopefully that trend will continue in the days ahead. You're going to have the House once again pushing repeal legislation in July. It obviously won't actually be repealed given the dynamics in the Senate and the White House, but it's clear this is going to be a major issue again, and maybe it can be close to the type of issue it was back in 2010.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for the most solid, good martini you can find out of this week, it's that, look, if you're a Republican and you can't beat a guy for taxing the uninsured, then you don't deserve to win. You know, I mean, as I said, this is no longer Obamacare. This is now the Obama health care tax. And what's more is that this is a tax deliberately aimed at the uninsured. People who, you know, by and large, you know, some people choose not to purchase health insurance because they don't think they need it. Generally, a lot of young people believe they're invulnerable and indestructible. And then, of course, you have lots of people who, just can't afford it. And while there's a certain amount of, you know, help from some folks in there, the numbers, the preliminary numbers are 26 million people. 70 to 75% make less than $200,000 a year are now on the hook for the new tax. Well, gee, that's a great argument for Republicans to say. This is, Obama himself ran against this in 2008. And if the Democrats had said, we're instituting a new tax, Obamacare never would have passed. So there is opportunity in this. Secondly, I can almost hear the response as you're laying out what Romney said yesterday, because I've seen it on Twitter, I've seen it in my email box, seen it on other blogs. I'm like, well, do you really think Mitt Romney's going to end Obamacare? Don't you think he's just saying, well, look, I think the chances that a President Romney would sign a repeal of Obamacare into law are something in the neighborhood of 90%, perhaps even more than that. But let's say you're a skeptic of Mitt Romney. Let's say you feel burned by him. You think he's a flip-flopper, and you think the odds are 50-50 or so. Would you rather have the president who you think is a 50-50 shot to repeal Obamacare, or would you rather have the president who's guaranteed to move heaven and earth to keep it in place? That is the choice before you. There is no perfect third. I mean, you can vote third party, but that just helps Obama. And so if you want to stop Obamacare, you got to pull out all the stops to elect Mitt Romney the next president of the United States, period. Full stop. No ifs, ands, or buts. So this is not really the tone you should take on a good martini, I realize. But I don't want to hear any more of this whining, or the time for complaining about Mitt Romney ended, during the primaries. It ended, you could argue that, maybe there's a little bit of room. But look, it's all in now. All right. You don't like Obamacare. You can't vote for some third party guy. You can't stay home. If you're happy or trying to pull out all the stops for, a Republican majority in the Senate, that's fine. A lot of people seem to think, oh, you'll never get 60 votes for that. You don't need 60 votes for that, folks.
Right.
It's now a tax bill. It's a budget matter. You can use reconciliation. All you need is 51 votes. And that can give you either by winning 51 seats or by winning 50 votes and having the Republican vice president to break the tie. In addition to that, a President Romney could issue waivers to anybody who wanted one on day one starting his presidency, or at least his Health and Human Services Secretary could. So if we win in 2012, that Obamacare comes to an end fairly rapidly, and there's all kinds of different ways you can do it. If we don't, it is with us for the rest of our lives. Those are the stakes. I hope everybody gets that memo. And one avenue of eliminating Obamacare was taken; it was removed from us, and now we got to focus all everything in that other one. Let's, you know, no time to be dilly dallying.
Yeah, there's one path left to victory here. The easier path may have been the ruling yesterday potentially, but it didn't happen. So now there's one option left, and so that's the option that the grassroots is going to pursue. A lot of the Tea Party folks saying you're going to see the movement reignited to the point it was a couple of years ago. I certainly hope that's the case. You mentioned the arguments. That is likely to be the counter argument against Mitt Romney. Another one, of course, is going to be Obama constantly pounding the drum that a lot of what he did in this bill was patterned after what Romney did in Massachusetts. But the fact that people hate this bill and Mitt Romney is promising to repeal it should be enough to give him the edge on what is still an extremely unpopular piece of legislation. On to Martini number two now. And Jim, you and I think pretty much struck the proper tone yesterday that this decision was awful. As much as we probably still respect to some extent and to a large extent, maybe even over as many decisions, Chief Justice John Roberts, we think he kind of blew it on his explanation that this mandate survives as a tax, even though it failed under two different clauses of the Constitution. And conservatives have spent really the latter half of Thursday trying to come up with a silver lining, some of which are very real. You mentioned one in the previous part of our discussion about how this is now a tax bill, so it only takes 51 votes or 50 plus a Republican vice president to repeal it. Others have talked about how Chief Justice Roberts saying that this would be a violation of the Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, as a major dialing in of federal power. The bottom line, though, is that this could have been over yesterday, Obamacare. And as we just mentioned, there's only one option left now, much more complicated option, and that's taking the White House and hopefully both chambers of Congress. But there was a golden opportunity to do this on good, solid constitutional grounds. And if the reports are to believe from ABC and elsewhere, we had it won, and Roberts changed his mind late.
Yeah, it's disturbing on a lot of different levels. I mean, the first thing is that I see the logic in the Roberts decision. If the federal government has the right to issue a tax credit for having health insurance, why wouldn't they have the right to impose a tax on not having health insurance? All right, you know, I can see the logic there. I think most of us figured that if you believe that the government had the authority under a part of the Constitution, but not the one that it had used in any of its justification of this, then what you can do is void the law, make them go back to square one again, and do it again and see if you can get it done right constitutionally this time. There would have been a result that would have made all of us pretty happy, and obviously with a Republican House, you would never have seen anything like Obamacare come through again. What Roberts did was say, look, the whole time you explicitly argued that it's not a tax, but you know what? I look at it and I see a tax, and that's constitutional, so it's hunky-dory. A really disappointing turn of events. And if it's true that Roberts basically did this to preserve the good name of the Supreme Court, it's really disturbing because it kind of argues I have so much respect for John Roberts, I almost don't want to believe that it was that swayed him, that everything we're seeing is genuinely his honest opinion, and that there was no outside pressure or fear of loss of stature for the court that went into this. And the idea of too much criticism of the court swaying the key vote here is really unnerving. I think some of the criticism of Roberts has been kind of overwrought, but on the other hand, some of it is pretty deserved, that he came around with a line of thinking that really isn't all that. A lot of people were obviously shocked by, people did not see it in his decisions, and the idea of him basically voting to get rid of Obamacare, finding it unconstitutional, and then later saying, oh, wait, I changed my mind. I don't call him Chief Justice Emily Letella, but it just is very a surprising turn of events, and it's just going to further, I think, on the right side of the aisle, undermine faith in the good judgment of the Supreme Court. Victor Davis Hanson has a post in the corner that no one should read while handling sharp instruments or under the influence of drugs, because it's very depressing and indicates that, you know, the stakes in this coming election are very, very high, and that, look, if we lose, it's not the America we grew up with, Greg. We should not have any illusions about what we're up against, and the tide is not always in our favor.
And if that happens because Roberts decided the institution was more important than the Constitution, that would be very depressing indeed, but we can't know that for sure. So we should.
This is our hemlock martini, really.
Absolutely right. His one line in the decision that a lot of folks are looking at today saying, essentially, it's not the job of the court to protect the American people from their own electoral decisions. That is certainly true. But if those decisions are unconstitutional, you're still duty-bound to rule in the way that the Constitution would demand. But we do have a chance now to rectify this in November, as we said before. So it was just yesterday, Jim, shortly after we recorded our podcast, that President Obama strode to the podium in the White House and solemnly thanked the Supreme Court, tried his best not to gloat, talked about how, you know, people are going to try to figure out who are the political winners and losers here. But that misses the point. This is about helping America, and it's time to move on. It's time to be grown-ups, work together, and create jobs. Then on his Twitter feed, we just get the line, "It's still a BFD," which is, of course, reflective of Joe Biden at the signing ceremony of this monstrosity. This is a big expletive deleted deal. And so for the team that somehow always claims it's not spiking the football, but can't get out of the way from spiking their own football.
Greg, BFD means big federal debt, right?
That would be more accurate.
Yeah, I mean, as you pointed out, there were other comments from folks at the DNC.
Oh, yeah.
The term "it's constitutional" rhymes with "witches" was one other one that came out there. They're selling a T-shirt that says, you know, BFD and things like that. You know, you just kind of get this feeling that the next Obama campaign email is just going to say, "Just send us the bleeping money now, bleeps." You know, by November, they will all sound like Samuel L. Jackson or Andrew Dice Clay or Rahm Emanuel. You know, when I sent out that message, that's what the next Obama campaign email is going to sound like. Somebody said, well, actually, that's what the rough drafts sound like when Rahm was still there. So that is where we are. I'd like to think that this at some point would rub some people the wrong way, but, you know, no guarantees of this. We're in uncharted territory of American political culture, Greg. So I'll have like an extra 9 or 10 martinis tonight, probably.
Yeah, and maybe something even a little more strenuous than that. Jim, it's been a very long week, much of it not going our way. Hopefully next week we'll do a little better on that front, survive the blistering weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you on Monday.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.